I'm Christoph Wolf. I'm a professor of music at Harvard University. Bach wrote the St. Matthew Passion after his St. John Passion, and both passions were written for the same purpose, namely to present the Passion story in the Good Friday Vesper service at the principal churches of Leipzig.
My name's Ian Bostridge. I'm a tenor from England, and one of the main things I sing in any year are the evangelist roles, both in the St. Matthew and in the St. John Passion by Bach. And I think the Matthew Passion is one of the greatest pieces of music in the Western repertory, and to start one's journey towards understanding that piece is a very important point in anybody's life.
I am Joshua Rifkin. I'm the director of the Bach Ensemble. I was about 12 or 13, and I turned on the radio to hear a broadcast of the Passion from Tanglewood. And then I remember hearing this opening soprano entry, this extraordinary upward reaching arpeggio, and just being virtually lifted off the floor, being jolted as if by, 150, 200 volts of electricity.
I'm Anne Monoyos, and I'm a singer. The way the story has been put together, the combination of the forces, the gravity of the story, and the message of redemption at the same time, I think that it's just heart-wrenchingly beautiful music.
Johann Sebastian Bach's St. Matthew Passion continues to move audiences more than 270 years after it was first heard in St. Thomas's Church in Leipzig, Germany. Standing as one of the pillars of Western sacred music, it is at once monumental and intimate, deeply sorrowful and powerful. On this edition of Milestones of the Millennium, we'll take you on a journey through the St. Matthew Passion with the help of scholars, conductors, and singers, all closely associated with Bach's masterpiece. In addition to those we've already heard, we'll also be guided by Toon Koopman, director of the Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra, Ken Slowick, director of the Chamber Music Program at the Smithsonian Institution, and Michael Morrison, associate director of music at Swarthmore College. The Passion retells the events leading up to the crucifixion of Jesus, a dramatic and compelling story. Highlights of Part 1 include the Last Supper and the betrayal and arrest of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. It begins with an opening chorus, which, says Michael Morrison, immediately pulls the listener into the Passion.
The whole message of the Matthew Passion is told already in the opening chorus, and it's absolutely stunning to hear these three choirs. Two choirs saying, look, look, where the Lamb is coming, and look, look, look at our sins, and then soaring above that is a third choir singing the chorale melody, O Lamm Gottes unschuldig. It's unparalleled, I think, even in Bach's output.
The piece starts and builds and builds and builds. By the time the chorus comes in, you become part of this massive wave of sound. It just sweeps you right off your feet, and you just go with it.
Oh.
The evangelist is principally the storyteller. He carries the whole burden of the narrative, and he sings recitative. He never sings aria, really. And he introduces the protagonists who appear. We hear the voice of Christ, we hear the voice of Peter, of Pilate, and of a few other minor characters. But the bulk of the story is conveyed by the evangelist, and then the arias and the choruses in the Matthew Passion mainly form meditations on that.
The Last Supper, in the beginning, was a happy moment, everybody together, all believing in the same thing. So there's no need for Bach to write something sad there.
The first thing that strikes you when you hear this aria, which is Ich will dir mein Herz schenken, which means I will gladly give you my heart, the first thing that strikes you is that it sounds like a dance. And you wonder, good heavens, what is this, a dance at the Last Supper? It is obviously a dance, but I don't see it as a dance. It has its own earnestness. It speaks to the positive results from the Passion, the good things that will come out of it. It speaks to the charisma of Jesus.
One of the great things about Bach's musical settings is that they have something for everybody, so even a fairly superficial listener can draw something from it. These hymn stanzas would have been very well known to all of the parishioners, so that's something very direct that they could experience very readily.
Take, for example, the use of a chorale tune like the one we know as O Sacred Head Surrounded, which comes back five different times in the course of this Passion. Each time it's harmonized differently, and so the words that Bach wants to, or even the syllables of a word that Bach wants to highlight, he can do so with an accidental note or an inflected note in the harmony.
Thank you.
The interesting thing of Nun ist mein Jesus gefangen is that it's two parts. One part is the beginning where soprano and alt are singing in great sadness. And the choir is having the role of the bad people. They say, take him, get him in prison. The beautiful, sad music is interrupted the whole time by this, with the believers, the soprano and the alt, they just carry on. And then it bursts out in the second half in Sin Blitzen, Sin Donner.
Music is tossed back and forth at really lightning speed. The text is speaking of thunder and lightning between these two bodies. And if we imagine that these groups were separated by something like 30 meters space, both singing from lofts raised above the level of the congregation, and you and the congregation were sitting between this, the effect must have been really quite overwhelming. It's like being bombarded from every side, which is clearly what the text wants you to feel at this spot.
And so, as part one of Bach's St. Matthew Passion ends, Jesus has been arrested and is led away from his disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane. The stage is now set for the next part of the Passion, which culminates in his death on the cross. In a moment, we'll return with highlights from part two of the St. Matthew Passion. We're journeying through Johann Sebastian Bach's St. Matthew Passion with the help of renowned scholars, singers, and conductors. Bach wrote this Passion for the Good Friday service at the St. Thomas Church in Leipzig. He divided it into two parts. The second half follows the trial, crucifixion, and burial of Jesus. We're now at the beginning of part two, where the opening words, "My Jesus is gone now," signal a softening in the tone of Bach's music.
The most dramatic action has taken place, and now we're going to look back and then start on this inexorable process going through his trial and crucifixion. So the mood has, in a sense, not only darkened but grown much, much, much calmer, because the inevitability, I think, really has taken over here.
this aria for alto and the solo violin from the first orchestra, Erbarme Dich, it comes at the moment when Peter, acting out of fear, has denied for the third time his knowledge of Christ. And just then, as had been foretold, the cock crows immediately. And then, in a very beautiful, almost arioso-like moment in the evangelist's recitative, he said, and he went out and wept bitterly.
Even a great genius has moments where he's greater than great. And I think this is one of the moments, one of the most splendid arias Bach ever composed.
The plucked bass notes are like the tears of the singer, because the song says, "Have mercy on me and let my tears persuade you to be merciful."
Thank you.
there's an aria when Jesus is on the cross, and the alto of chorus one sings that Jesus has stretched out his hand to embrace us. And the second chorus asks, where shall we look? Where is this happening? Very much as it had asked in the opening chorus, you know, pointing to the action of Jesus carrying his cross. So it's a kind of evocation of that opening, but now in vastly different circumstances.
In the section where Jesus speaks his last words, the evangelist picks up the words and translates it into German. Lama, lama, asabtani, mein Gott, warum hast du mich verlassen? My God, why did you abandon me?
Jesus has died. The singer says, Mache dich mein Herz rein, ich will Jesum selbst begraben, make my heart pure, because I want to bury Jesus in you. It certainly is very different from anything else musically that's going on.
Bach is like Shakespeare, a person who knows that the tension for drama cannot go too long, so he needs to change a bit the atmosphere. He will use a different rhythm, a different tempo, a different kind of music, a more happy music. There's to believe everything will come right. For me, it's the moment of the happy ending.
It's as if you've reached a point of such utter resignation, but also utter identification with the transforming significance of this event, that you have moved to a wholly new plane.
The last chorus, Wir setzen uns mit Tränen nieder, is just gorgeous music.
It's a very dark movement and also, of course, a very dark moment in the history, but the St. Matthew Passion's performance on Good Friday is followed by the Easter Cantata. He could leave this open-ended because the resolution would come within just a couple of days. In a way, Bach acts here as a preacher, but a preacher who reaches his audience on more than just an intellectual level.
We're listening to the conclusion of the St. Matthew Passion, Johann Sebastian Bach's magnificent setting of the Passion story. It ends with this final chorus, We Sit Down in Tears. This performance, and many which we heard in the last hour, featured Philippe Herrevega conducting the Collegium Vocale of Ghent. The soloists included Ian Bostridge, Andreas Scholl, Sibylla Rubens, Franz Josef Zelisch, and Dietrich Henschel. The recording is on the Harmonia Mundi label. We also heard John Elliott Gardner conducting the English Baroque Soloists with soprano Barbara Bonney, recorded on the Archive label. For their comments on the St. Matthew Passion, we'd like to thank Ian Bostridge, Tone Kopman, Michael Morrison, Anne Monoyos, Joshua Rifkin, Kenneth Slowick, and Christoph Wolff.